We want to look this morning at what is titled here, Promoting Quality in Our Governance and in Our Administration. The reality is, most schools have been started by teachers, right? I mean, you don't normally have an administrator start a school or a businessman start a school unless the purpose is to make money. Or schools get started by people who want to teach. They want to train. And teachers don't necessarily understand all this. And I use the very technical term stuff involved in making educational programs work better. So in this particular session, we want to look at two specific, the different but related aspects of that other stuff, namely administration and governance, without which we really can't talk about excellence. We're going to be missing something. And I'm hoping in this session you can see that. Much of this material may be either new to you or strange to you. Because teachers love to teach. And that's good. Governance is what occurs, this is my definition, governance is what occurs when those who are the owners of a training program, and we need to talk about this, it's what occurs when those who are the owners of a training program assume responsibility for what is theirs. Governance is what occurs when those who are owners of our training programs assume responsibility for what is theirs. It's the primary way by which training institutions are accountable for what they do. To whom do we write reports? Do we write reports? Should we write reports? And it's the way that we explain what we're doing. It's how our excellence actually, it's the filter by which it makes it out to the rest of the universe. Administration, on the other hand, is developing and coordinating a team of people who can do specific things that actually need to be done. There's a lot of things one could do. What needs to be done to support your training program? A team of people. Both of these are important pieces of having quality. We want to talk about this. Now, are boards worth the effort? I mean, why would you want one? Governments, constitutions, authorities, the structures usually require some sort of board or council or governing body. Any place around the world I have been, somebody wants this. But in my experience, few boards are actually functional. Many board members don't come regularly, or they sleep through the meeting, or they only come if they're paid to come. I'll come, but not only do you pay my transportation, which is reasonable, but you can pay me a little extra. This is a bit of a job to sit on your board. And they won't come if you don't pay them. Or they don't come at all. A board is often only a token group of national church leaders convened for appearance sake. They don't actually do anything, but we need their picture. We need their names. They're a reference group for us. And so it's a token bunch of church people. We really don't want to listen to them, but we need them and we need their names in our book. Board meetings themselves involve simply listening to reports about issues that have already been decided by somebody else. If I'm an important church leader, why would I want to come? Just to listen to somebody read me a report, which I may or may not find interesting. Boards tend to be, you won't find this in a book, boards tend to be where important people waste their collective time making decisions about things that the staff should have made. It really isn't the board's responsibility to decide whether you should buy a photocopying machine. And why would you invite these really important people to come to meet together to listen and decide stuff that honestly is the responsibility of a staff member? That's not what boards are about. Boards may, I've seen this, boards become committees. You know, they become your personnel committee. You know, they're the ones that interview and hire. Or finance committee. They're the ones that, you know, kind of receipt and write the reports on finance. Or they're the ones that make the decisions about admissions to the school or maybe a constitutional review. And although there's input from this, very frankly, these responsibilities do not lie with a board. They lie with a management team, with the people who have responsibility for these things. Board meetings often are not very much fun. Now, I'm not sure that one of the objectives of a board meeting is to be fun, but it should be satisfying to be there. You know, to meet together with people and consider the things that God is doing within a theological training program should be a satisfying experience. But in many cases, it's just not much fun. How? In boards, you end up with these relational problems. You bring in these important church people, and when they get together, it's a great opportunity to talk about things that have nothing to do with the school. And so you end up with these strained tensions, the we-they issues. Whether it's the school fighting the church or churches fighting each other, power struggles between people, personalities and groups, the meeting can become a forum for problems that has little to do with the school. That's an undisciplined board, but it becomes reality, and it just isn't a very satisfying thing. To understand why we have a board, we need to look at the purpose, the nature of governance, as I say. This is what the owners do. It's to help training programs be accountable to those for whom they exist. To be accountable to those whom they exist to serve as the school, the training program, faithfully accomplishes what was intended to be accomplished. If you have no goals and you shoot an arrow up into the sky, wherever it falls is where you intended for it to go, right? And if we don't really have a defined sense of why are we doing this? What is our purpose? Who are we trying to serve? Who is it that is our constituency? And governance answers that. Because it provides the structure by which we can be focused. It helps us to explain every day why we're doing what we're doing. We're faithfully fulfilling, faithfully accomplishing that which was intended to be accomplished. When boards are neither strong nor functional, wrong people, you know, really disruptive relationships, they don't work together doing what they're supposed to do, then training programs, this educational institution we're trying to put together, however big or small it is, really doesn't have a firm foundation. Poor governance may be the single biggest weakness for many theological training programs. So the foundational questions are, and there are three of them, whose school are we? Let me say it in a different way. Who would say of you, this is my school? This is where our students study. And they claim you. They own you. It's not just simply you sitting in the office deciding, who is it that maybe possibly we might be able to serve? It's those who are being served looking at you and saying, this is our program. There's an ownership in that. I mean, think of the verse when David goes, the Lord is my shepherd. It's wonderful that it actually doesn't say, the Lord is our shepherd. It's true, of course. But there's something very intimate and powerful about being able to say, the Lord God Almighty is my shepherd. This is my school. This is our school. And we need constituencies that say this. To just exist because they need us is actually a very unstable platform on which to stand. We exist to serve somebody. And when that somebody will turn around and say of you, this is my school. This is our school. We have made a huge leap towards stability. You're standing on a foundation. Who makes the rules that we need to follow? I'll talk about this in a second. Whose amen you need? Or whose is actually fatal? Who makes the rules that you're required to follow? Who decides who can teach and who can't teach? Who says yes or no to your curriculum? Who says yes or no to your budget? Who says yes or no to personnel that you brought on to be part of your team? Who says yes or no to your building plans? Who says yes or no to your extension ideas? Who makes the rules that define how you function? That's ownership. That's who it is that decides how you're actually gonna function. And thirdly, who helps us make sure that we continue to be and do what we were supposed to be and do? What was intended? Because it's very easy for school to wander off here, there, and when we actually lose our way. We're so busy looking for a constituency that we'll be anything to anybody just so we can find enough students to continue to exist. That's not stability. Stability says the owners are saying, this is our program, this is what you're supposed to do. And we can grow. We can change over time. But the ownership governance question actually provides for us a stability of purpose. Who we're supposed to be, they hold us accountable. Are you doing that? We exist to train pastors for this denomination. Are you? And they will hold you accountable. It's your purpose. So whose school are you? Very important question. Who makes the rules that you need to follow? Who helps us make sure that we're actually doing what we're supposed to? So, since the government likes to make rules, are they their owner? Sometimes we behave that way. I mean, every time a government, a Department of Education says, oh, do this, okay. And we end up losing our way because we're actually making the government our primary constituency. The government is not your owner. I hope not. Now, there are legality pieces that we should submit to. I mean, we may need to submit to a registration process to offer things that are appropriate within the structures of the country in which you exist. That needs to be. But it doesn't make them their owner. You don't primarily exist to serve a government. You primarily exist, somebody else, and then the government is never going to say, you're our school. Never. So then, the logical question for most schools, are we our own owners? Do we ultimately own ourselves? And to look at most programs, that's not an illogical question. Because we write our purpose statement. We develop our own five-year plan. We make the rules. In fact, we enforce the rules. regarding curriculum, internal operations, student selection. We do that. We hire, we fire, we evaluate, we determine our own salaries. There's any money anyway. We determine our own salaries along with finding and administering funds. I mean, it would be reasonable to say, honestly, we are our own owners, right? That's awkward. Although much of the practical, and I use the word implementation, of governance policies is a task that should be assumed by our management team, and we'll get to this, we really should not be our own owners. We are not our primary constituency. Now, you might think that at some schools. They exist more for themselves than for their students, even. No, we exist to serve. We exist for somebody who says of us, this is my school. This is my training option. And honestly, we shouldn't primarily be giving reports to ourselves. So, are the founders our owners? And there's some very important people in the history of some of the schools. I mean, Union Bible Institute, Mr. Johansson. And for many years, every question ever asked in a Senate meeting, in a board meeting, is what would Mr. Johansson have done? But he died about 40, 50 years ago. And although this was a very important man who did amazingly progressive things for the school doesn't exist to serve Mr. Johansson. Or David Seckham and George Whitfield, without which the school probably would not exist. You know, in terms of what he did in developing faculty, finding funding, putting a vision together, building. I mean, this is an amazing man who did a lot for that school. But it isn't David Seckham's school. It exists to serve churches like CESA, whatever its new name is. And so it exists for a particular church denomination and others who take advantage of a good training program. And so you can look at these really important people who really are a significant part of our history, and we should honor them. But they don't own us. You know, they nurtured us into existence, but we don't exist primarily to serve our founders. In the same way a factory exists to provide profit to its founders and stakeholders. We're not a company in that way. We're not a business in the same way. So even though these are important people, and sometimes their amen is essential, and sometimes their is fatal, but they don't own us. The people who own us are the people who need us. So are the beneficiaries of the program our owners? Absolutely. The people you serve, hopefully, will say of you, this is our program. And there's this strong sense of identification and ownership. Those who consider the institution to be their school. This is the group that needs to be acknowledged. They need to be honored and listened to. And when we structure that in, we have just defined governance. Those who own us, who will guide us, it gives us stability. This is not really a question of legal ownership. A constitution can talk about, you know, who owns the property, who owns the school, and we need some legal definitions. And it's not even a question of who's the most powerful person around. It really is a broader sense of to whom are we responsible? Who do we exist to serve? And that's a governance question. I'm going to suggest three broad levels, and the language you use for this can change. These are concepts. And so I'm giving it titles, but there are lots of other ways you could give titles to this. I talk about a general assembly. This is the kind of the owners. These are the, you know, these wonderful, older, wise African pastors. And you need their amen. If they don't approve, it's going to be really difficult for you to move forward. If any of them go, it's fatal. We can't go anywhere. And sometimes you'll see schools with boards, but the people on their board really aren't the important people. This General Assembly are the important people. Who is it that has power over your program? Now, you might want to put your founder into that category, because this is a person who still has a great deal of influence and power over your program. But who is it that you're serving that's just really a very important person? And we need those very important people in some sort of council or advisory group, or come up with a really impressive title. We want to honor these people because we desperately need their approval. We don't want their disapproval. So we're going to create in our structure some kind of a once-a-year get-together. And what we're going to do to them is we're going to keep them informed. Provide them reports and information for understanding. They need to hear it from us first. If there's something to say, we need to say it. There aren't secrets for these people. We need to let them know the issues and how we're doing and the big stuff. And we just help them to understand. And so we provide them with information. This doesn't have to be written reports. We tell them stories. We keep them informed. We let them gather together so that they can help us talk about some of these bigger issues. Vision. What do they long for? What do we long for? What do they think about what we're longing for? We actually give them authority over some of these bigger issues. Who's going to be your next principal? I would want their approval. You know, your budget. Is this look right to you? Because ultimately, this group is going to represent all those that are going to actually provide the funding for your budget. So, I mean, some of these bigger issues, I'd let them decide. The little stuff, I wouldn't. They're not the best people to do this. But there's a very important bunch of people out there that it would be very helpful for you to have them as your counsel. Your whatever you choose to call them. We allow them to be the group that gives us feedback. If we're doing well, we want them to feel it. If we're doing badly, we need to hear it from them. They can be a forum for us as we think about better or new ways to do training or administration or fundraising or recruitment or whatever we want to do. We draw on this group because they really are important people. It's your counsel. They're not deciding rules and regulations. That's actually for governing board. But this is the ownership of your school. I would feed them. I would honor them. I would give them the best seats of position. If you have a graduation ceremony, these very important people need to be visible because they are our point of stability. They represent those that would say, "This is my school." And we want them in, not out. The importance and the influence of this group should not be underestimated. There are people who honestly have this power of amen. And if they don't say amen, we're in trouble. So, but those that really matter, we need to have a relationship with. We honor them, we put them on some sort of council. Second level, then, is what I would call a governing board. These are people who actually represent the owners. They shouldn't be people from someplace else. You're not just bringing in specialists. But it is a smaller group that actually works for their expertise. I mean, this upper group may be all pastors because you're serving the church. But your governance group may have a lawyer, it may have a financial person, it may have an HR person, it can deal with the hiring and firing. It may have a couple of pastors. It's a group that actually is made up for their expertise. And this is the group that helps to make the rules and regulations. This is the group that actually defines the purpose, puts it in words, who defines the mission, and over time they affirm the mission. This is the group that, working with the rest of the school, develops your strategic plan. Not all the details of it, but develops the plan. They develop operational policy and rules. They don't hire your teachers. They suggest how your teachers could be hired and what kind of people should be hired. They don't actually draw up, they don't do your finances, but they may develop the rules that tell you how finances should be handled. So this is the group that makes the policy rules, the regulations of it. And then they oversee the implementation of the very policies that they've helped to develop. Functionally, in a legal sense, they're the ones that serve as trustees to actually watch that what's supposed to happen is happening. And so in a legal sense, for most institutions, this is the group that becomes the owners. But they're not really the owners. The owners are this broader group of people. But your governing board is a group that makes the rules and the regulations. I've written more about this in the chapter I have in the book on governance, but we're going to leave it here for this. This group should meet maybe quarterly. They don't need to meet every week. They meet maybe quarterly. I don't think it helps to have lifetime members on a governing board. You might have lifetime members on this kind of a overall general assembly board. But on an actual working governing board, I don't think they should stay there forever. There's a value in rotating in, rotating out. A board speaks with one voice. Now, inside of the board, if everybody always thinks the same thing, it's probably not a very healthy board. I don't need six other people to say what I already think. I need six other people to help me think. And by having different points of view, of seeing things in different ways, inside of a board meeting with a door shut, this can be a pretty lively meeting. But when the board decides, the board has decided. And so you don't have an individual board member walking out, muttering and telling things about the other board members. No, the board stands as the board. It's a commitment they make to the school. And so when we decide, we have decided. And so you need a board that's actually faithful to each other and to the school. They speak with one voice. That's why you have a board. It's a governing board. Now, they work best with reports given them ahead of time. Don't waste their time by reading to them with words that take a long time, something they could read on their own time, ahead of time to prepare for a board meeting. So that when they come together, the board can be efficient with their time. We live in a world where you've got some very intelligent business people who know how to run a board. We need these people for our schools. This is a board with expertise to help us with the rules and the regulations. And then you have this big, large group of the amen people. You have the governing board, which makes the rules and regulations, and you have your administrative or management team. This is where administration fits into governance. And your management team is the group that's on campus. It's the group that actually implements the rules and the regulations. Board doesn't implement the rules and regulations. The administrative team does, or the management team, or whatever you choose to call it. The principal whatever title, this actually changes around the world, they call them different things. I love the vice chancellor in some countries, you know, just a fantastic title for a principal. The principal is responsible to see that things are done. Head of a team. Working together with all of the school's administrative staff and faculty. Worst thing that a school can do is have a principal who does everything. It'll kill your principal, and frankly, it'll kill your school. And here's the reality of human nature. If you have a principal who likes to do things, the rest of the staff will let him. It's just a bad idea. We need a team of people. Now, how big that team is depends on how big your school is. You know, the needs that are there. But the principal then will listen to advice. The feedback that comes. You're implementing the policies of the governing board and actually doing it day to day. And the principal doesn't do it. He oversees, works with the team that does. Now, if I go back to the board then has this visionary dimension. It helps us to see into the future. Not just what we are doing, but what we could be doing. The implementation of the vision falls onto the administration team. But the board helps us to dream. The board does have this administrative and managerial dimension because it's got to pay attention to the actual implementation of rules and regulations. Your board, since it represents the General Assembly, does have a public relations dimension. These are people who live out there, and on our behalf, they can tell our story. So there is a public relations part. There's a fund development part that falls onto the board and to this wonderful group of advisors. And there usually is a legal dimension. If somebody responds for the school, it often is this governing board that responds. So the board has some specific responsibilities. I have a friend I worked with through the Organization Overseas Council, Dr. Manfred Kohl, some of you know. German, good-sized guy. And he put together what he calls the Rule of Seven. I like this. And it's the responsibilities of individual board members. Now, this is a suggestion list. Don't be legalistic about this. But this is kind of an interesting way to put together a package of what board members should do. And Manfred suggests that every board member should spend 7 seconds a day praying. Now, we're not talking, look at your watch and count to seven. But his point is, if you're a member of a board, every single day you will pray for the school. Every single day. If you're too busy to pray for the school, you should not be on their board. Just a responsibility. It's what you do. And so every single day, I will pray God's blessing on this institution. I will pray for their needs. Now, Manfred suggests 7 minutes a week to stay informed. Again, he's not talking about your watch. But what he's saying is there's reports, there's information, there are bulletins, and periodically, you know, the principal or others will write something, will share something, and it's saying that a board member will read what comes from the school. And you're not going to read pages and books of things, but 7 minutes isn't a lot, but you're going to read the reports you get. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be on the board. Manfred suggests 7 hours a month to stay in touch. This means showing up on campus every now and then. Have lunch with a principal. Have lunch with a faculty. Sit in a class. Go to chapel. Talk to students. When the board meets, the board member knows what's going on. They're involved. And sometimes your board members are actually graduates. They don't have to be, but they could be. And it's just saying stay in touch. Pray for the school, read the reports, they visit. 7 days a year, you're going to be in meetings. Now, I suggested they only meet 4 times a year. They're probably not going to meet 2 days when they meet. They might meet for an evening. But they might choose to have a retreat, you know, or they might have a special time when they get together on a conference. They might choose to come to a conference like this. They might come to the graduation or other special ceremonies. But in the course of the year, as a board member, I'm going to give 7 days to this school. Manfred suggests 7 years on the board. Not 25, not 45, not 220. You know, we're talking about a period of time that's not too short. But let them invest their life into the board, and after a reasonable period of time, let someone else come onto a board. But if you're going to go off the board, take the last 7 weeks of your seventh year to help train your incoming board member, who needs to get up to speed. And so the wisdom of 7 years gets passed on to someone new. And lastly, Manfred would say of a board member that the board needs to take all by itself about 1/7 of the overall budget. That doesn't mean it comes out of their pocket. You don't necessarily have rich board members, although you might. But it means you've got board members who have their own influence. If a board member is not a regular financial contributor to your school, they shouldn't be a board member. If they're not willing to invest in your school, why should they be making rules and regulations for your school? And they represent churches. Is your school on the church's budget? Do they take an offering for you? Do they do a Kenyan harambe for you? And they raise, you know, is every board member in some way helping to raise funds for your institution? If not, they shouldn't be a board member. Now, this isn't asking a lot. But it does define for a board member some responsibilities that help them to be better board members. Because they pray for you, they read about you, they visit you, they live among you, they come faithfully to the meetings, they contribute to you, they probably recruit for you. So here's just a suggestion of some board responsibilities, the things that people could do. How about principal then? If this is what the board does, governance says, well then, what does the principal do? And we look at responsibilities, and so here's the board's responsibility. Well, here's the principal's responsibility. Principal's responsible for strategic planning, although the board helps to do it. And so most of the work of putting strategic plan together is going to be done by the principal and his team. So this is something that comes to the principal. Operational planning. Staff development. The budget, and mind you, the principal should never do these things all by himself. This is a team task. Regular reports to the board on the health of the school, on the needs of the school. You have not because you ask not. And so we mutter and we complain and we whine and nobody even knows we have a need. Regular reports. Principal represents the school. It's public relations. You get a major donor. They don't want to see anybody but the chief. That's the way it goes. Part of the responsibility. And in any place I've ever been in Africa, the principal is a teacher. I mean, there are other parts of the world where you may have somebody in a role of principal who's not a teacher. You just don't see it in Africa. It's our love. Interaction with students, knowing the world of our students at the school, most principals are going to want to find time to teach. What we need to help them do is not teach too much, because there's a lot of other things they also need to be doing. Because the principal's going to divide his or her time between building relationships with the board. Everything works well if you've got healthy relationships. With the members of the General Assembly, these very important people, taking time to visit with them is invaluable, but it takes time. Investing in the school's leadership or management team. I don't do everything. I care for the team that does. Doing public relations and fund development. And so between these three things, most of a person's time gets and it's gone. Teaching is going to be added onto this. And I wouldn't discourage it. I think teaching is a great way not only to invest in students, but to know a school. When I try to work with a school, if I've had an opportunity to teach there, it is just so much better to help me understand relationships and students and problems and levels. To just simply sit in a meeting, you only learn so much. And so for a principal to understand the health of a school, it's a good thing to teach. Just don't spend all of your time teaching, or you should have somebody else do the principal's job. So that's what we shift then. I mean, I've actually gone from what was governance, the questions of ownership and kind of how we structure the ownership. And to me, this is the stability of a school. When we have these owners that listen to us and support us and this board that helps to develop rules and regulations. And so your administrative or management is actually implementing what this solid foundation is put in place for us. So this is where administration fits into governance. But let's look for a second then at this concept of quality in administration or quality in management. Now, as I said earlier, administration is developing and coordinating a team. Administration should never be done by one person. You don't have an administrator. You've got a team. And this is what supports your teaching program. It's what makes everything else work. But this team of people doesn't just do anything and everything. It does specific things that actually need to be done. It would be possible to have two or three times the number of students of people hired to do administration. Because you can always find more things that could be done. We've got to somehow have the wisdom to say what needs to be done. And what needs to be done, not just to make for a nice campus or a... No, what needs to be done to make our program work. And rather than defining what those things are, let me tell you what they are not. I mean, what needs to be done besides teaching? Let me talk about what shouldn't be. These are some basic things not to do. It helps us to define maybe what we should be doing, but this is what we should not be doing. Don't even try to do everything that has ever been done since the beginning of time on your institution. We've done a lot of things over the years, much of which probably has been useful, but all of which really didn't need to be. It is possible. I mean, the last thing I would say, when you organize your files so they're perfect, all your files are absolutely brilliantly done, when every room is painted exactly right, every whiteboard pen actually works, everything is absolutely perfect in the school, that's usually the last thing you do before you close down altogether. Schools that are growing are usually messy. I don't know about your program. We're always scrambling to find ways to make stuff work. That's actually a sign of vibrancy. But chaos isn't what we want. And so vibrancy is a good thing. Total chaos doesn't help at all. And we can really complicate things sometimes by creating our own levels of bureaucracy. No, you can't talk to me about that. You can only talk to her. And she's only here on Tuesday afternoons between 3 and 3:30. You know? And without her signature, sorry. You know, I mean, it's the way our government functions. And we can do the same thing to ourselves by making things so hopelessly complicated. Processes that maybe make sense to somebody, but they just make education complicated. Don't do it. Don't try to do everything. Do what needs to be done. And here's, don't just grab any available body. I've seen so many, and in the mission world I've worked in, this is kind of rule of thumb. Oh, we need a treasurer, even though you know nothing whatsoever about money. You know, we need you're free. You know, and so we tend to grab all these available bodies, that do things for which they simply have never been trained and honestly are not gifted or competent. Don't do it. When I worked with Overseas Council, I had somebody that I worked with who was the most competent gal I have ever known, ever. I loved working with her. Because she knew what she was doing. You could say to her, can you do this? And she'd think, I can do that. Or she'd say, no, not this week, but I can get to it next week. And she would. Loved working with her. People that have gifts of administration, and the Bible talks about gifts of administration, are absolute gold to us. Don't just grab any old body. Find competent people. Don't forget also that the administrative team is part about the learning environment. What do I mean by this? Students learn from what they see. The way your administrative team functions is the way they're going to make their churches function. The way we do it, the way we relate, how do we treat each other? I mean, this can be size of offices. I'm a professor, so look at my office. We have adjunct professors. We have part-time teachers. We have secretaries. We have part-time helpers. And where they work, what the size of their desk is, what their room looks like. We define these things and we give people status. We don't treat them as people. We treat them as responsible positions within an organization. What's the church going to look like? Pastor's office will be enormous. If you have an assistant pastor, it'll be a little bit less. If you have a secretary's office, other people who are there, and the way they treat each other. I mean, where did they learn this? They learned it from us. And so the way we treat each other. I had a friend in a church who was a Christian education director, large church. And the man would walk in the morning, and he would stop by. We had about four secretaries that would work there, and he'd stop by each desk and say, how you doing today? Most of the time, the answer was, fine, thank you. Next desk. But if there was a problem, he would spend as much time as it would take to listen, to talk, to pray together, and sometimes he wouldn't make his office before 12 o'clock noon. Because he spent his time taking care of the team. What's the church going to look like if we treat our staff that way? You see, and so who we are, the way we relate to each other, the relational stuff that's biblical, is going to actually define what the church is going to look like. It matters what our team looks like. And then what I said before, just don't do it alone. We just work better when we work as a team. You can go fast by yourself. You'll go farther if you've got a team working with you. So the most important thing to do in putting this administrative team together is to develop a team of people who are emotionally healthy. If they bring so much baggage, they're not going to get much work done. Who are competently doing what actually needs to be done. That's a mouthful. Most important thing to do is develop a team of emotionally healthy people competently doing what actually needs to be done. And it is much better to equip, encourage, and empower your staff than to constantly be hiring new people. I mean, one of the things we actually ask in ACTI accreditation is how stable is your administrative team? Tell me about turnover. Because when you have a lot of turnover, it actually says you're not a very healthy school. People don't like working there. And so when you see people who have been there for years and they love being there, this is their ministry. And they serve students, they're serving the church. And so what we want to do is we want this team to be really competent. We want to help them in what they're doing. There are ways that we can do this. How to strengthen your team? Respect them for who they are. We can't respect them who they're not. This is who God made them to be. And there's a certain personality and gifting and passion for ministry. And we can't hold somebody accountable for what, very frankly, God never equipped them to be. We want to give them job descriptions. One of the huge problems in schools is sort of everybody's supposed to do everything. That's really inefficient. This isn't mine to do. Talk to her. You know, this isn't hers to do. Talk to him. And so we define responsibilities. Now, a job description probably should only describe about 75% of what they actually do, because ultimately, in a school, we all do everything. I mean, a conference like this, how many people are doing things that they don't normally do? But it makes the conference happen. And so my job description doesn't say put bottles of water on tables every morning. But I do it. It's part of a conference. You know, my job description doesn't say straighten up chairs or give directions or make suggestions or copy this. But ultimately, we're going to share responsibilities. But within that, define what's mine to do. What's yours to do? And so we actually develop these job descriptions. I used to let my people write their own job description. You tell me what you think you're supposed to do. I'd look at it. We'd talk about it. But I want this perception of what do they perceive as their primary task. We need to provide people with adequate salary and healthcare type things. If they can't feed their family, I mean, we're a ministry. We don't pay money. We don't have money. How can we? Listen, you cannot keep a good team if you don't adequately care for them. Everyone knows it's a ministry. But that doesn't give us an excuse to, over years of time, to underinvest in our team. I mean, one of the things I will look for when I visit a school, if somebody were to give you a gift of $5,000 or $10,000 U.S. dollars, and it comes to you, what do you do with it? And it says to everybody there what your priorities are. I mean, do you put it into a new vehicle? Do you put it into the maintenance of a building? Do you start building a new building? Do you buy books for the library? Or in some way, do you invest it in your team? Teaching and administrative. And we need to balance this. Over time, we're going to share resources because the whole program needs resources. But if over time, the team is never the recipient of gifts, they understand their priority. Your ministry is building. Your ministry is everything. You give scholarships to students, but you don't actually adequately pay the team that's teaching the students. I mean, in time, the priority becomes really visible. And these, some of these folks that have been around forever and they're unbelievably valuable, we need to honor them by adequate health care, salary benefits. Work at it. If we're going to raise funds, let's raise funds for our team. Give them regular feedback. Feedback is a gift to a worker. To say to them they're doing well, to honor them. You know, well done, good and faithful servant. And most of the time, our team does wonderful stuff. We never say it. And to find ways to honor this team, and then to give them honest feedback when they need correction. If all they ever hear is complaining from us, we're not going to be much fun to work for. We want to help them be competent. In what ways can I help you to do this job even better? And whether it's a time off to do a training course, some computer skills, some management skills, you know, whether they take part in this, whether we just let them read something, I mean, whether we give them some on-the-job training, whatever it is, how can we help our team to be competent? We're a theological school. We encourage them and we give them pastoral care. One of the most important questions we can ever ask each other is, how are you? And listen for a response. People say fine, but they don't mean fine. Yeah, and so how are they, really? Because dealing with this emotionally, spiritually healthy people is going to make for a fabulous team to train people for ministry. That involves not leaving conflict unresolved. And there always are conflicts. We're two or three are gathered together. There probably is conflict someplace. I mean, this is... And conflict can be really healthy because sometimes conflict arises over things that need to be, but they're not yet reality. And so some of the dissonance between, you know, the current condition and what really needs to be can actually be a conflict problem. Don't leave it unresolved. Talk about it. Work it out. Find ways to deal with these sorts of things. Because we want a great administrative team. Bear in mind, somebody has to be in charge. I really don't believe in the anarchy of education. I mean, there is some sense of structure to what we do. Somebody's in charge. He or she should develop, train, supervise the team. And I would generally separate into three broad areas. There is an academic side, obviously, to what we do. Teachers and the curriculum, I mean, this is part of the academic side. But the administrative side then is all that is needed to make the academics actually work. You know, so I would put things like the library in administration. Although the teachers will indicate what books do we need, this is an administrative piece to make the program work. You know, your building and ground supervision, you know, your student records, your registrar stuff, this is all support services. Very important. It's related to, but I would put this under administrative stuff. And then there's a public relations and fund development side. We need funds or we can't do either one of these two things. And most of this involves external relations. It may be working with your alumni, but keep in contact with them because most of your alumni, if not all of your alumni, should also be donors to your program. If they're grateful for the education they received, they should periodically, regularly say thank you. And it may be a little thank you, I don't care, but they should say thank you every year for the rest of their life, if in fact they've received something from you. Their churches should say thank you. They've received something precious from you, and they got somebody who preaches better because they studied someplace. They counsel better, they evangelize better, and the church just says thank you. Somebody has got to coordinate those relationships. And the context. Now, your major donor types are going to want to talk to the principal. That's fine, but don't make the principal do all of the external relationships. And so for me, if you look at the broad organization of schools, you know, you're going to have this academic affairs. It may include your extension programs. It may include a whole host of things. But the administrative then is the part that supports this. And then your fund development public relations side is what helps to keep everything else functioning. I'm not legalistic about this, but these are three broad areas. And teachers tend to put everything in the academic box. I'm suggesting we need to honor the administrative stuff and this fund development public relations side of things. Dr. Tukumbo Adeyemo, maybe some of you knew, he was the General Secretary for the Association of Evangelicals in Africa. A Muslim convert to Christianity from a royal family in Nigeria, big guy, and for a number of years he was the head of the Association for Evangelicals. I've heard him say this many times. If you want to help Africa, if you really want to help Africa, strengthen the structures of Africa. If you really want to strengthen your theological programs, if you really want quality in what you are doing in your training programs, strengthen your structures. Don't complicate it. Don't make it a bureaucracy. But strengthen your structures so that your training part of it, the educational side of it, just goes better. Much of administration, if it's done really well, is invisible. It's kind of the gift of being a janitor. That when the teacher shows up to class, the class is ready. Student records are ready. You know, there's somebody who provides the supportive service. You never even see it. But if it's brilliantly done, it makes your teaching better. Strengthen the structures. You know, don't extend yourself so fast that you can't keep your structures strong. Because this is a very significant part of putting quality together.